Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The Athletic.
After their Nations League relegation last Friday, England and manager Gareth Southgate had 90 minutes to convince us they weren't sleepwalking towards World Cup humiliation.
It's collected now by Bukayo Saka. That's brilliant play! Oh, 2-2! What a finish! Mason Mount for England!
Yeah, they squeezed all the excitement into about 12 minutes in the end, didn't they? But the draw against Germany brought goals at last, but maybe as many questions as answers. England correspondent Jack Pitbrook and senior writer Ollie Kay are on hand to answer those questions. I'm Ian Irving, and this is the Athletic Football Podcast. So much to dissect then, including Harry Maguire's night, of course, but let's start with something a little bit more positive. Jude Bellingham has surely cemented his place for the World Cup, Jack, hasn't he?
I think he's cemented his place in the team. Probably the best thing about this break for England, these two games. He hadn't really played well for England in a big game before then. I thought he had some good moments in Milan on Friday, and then I thought he was fantastic last night. The way he takes the ball under pressure, moves it forward, you know, kept England on the front foot second half. Really, really good performance.
Ollie?
Totally agree. He's been in the squad for a while, and he's done well, and everybody can see the talent that he has, and everybody's excited by him. It wasn't always easy to see where he was going to fit in, how he was going to fit in as a regular starter or as a starter initially at the World Cup, but I think we all saw it last night. I've had it in my mind that he would be better suited to a 4-3-3 or a three-man central midfield, but he made that work last night alongside Declan Rice. I thought they both got through an awful lot of work, were good off the ball for most of the game, and as Jack said, he brings real quality in possession. And there was a period in the game where Germany were totally dominating possession, but I think for the most part, I'd say Bellingham gave Germany a lot to think about, and he to me, he has definitely played his way into the starting lineup, and I'm relieved he's done that because he's had the chance to do that because others haven't.
No, that's true, and it feels like that midfield pairing of Rice and Bellingham is a headache that Gareth Southgate doesn't need to worry about. He's got plenty else on his plate, certainly. We'll get into your piece, Ollie, in a little while about this international break for Gareth Southgate, where it leaves him and everything else aside. But just to continue the positives for a moment, Jack, the substitutions worked, didn't they? And that's encouraging going into a major tournament because England are going to need the squad, aren't they? It's not just about the first 11.
Yes, and this is something that Southgate's been criticised a lot about over the last few years, has been that he's unable to change the course of the game by using substitutions well. But I thought yesterday the addition of Saka and Mount changed the game, really. You know, it was Saka's run and Mount's finish that provided that goal for England, which made it 2-2. And they both obviously raised the level of the team. I think it's particularly important because Saka, if he sticks to 3-4-3, Saka, Mount and Foden, I think, are basically competing for one place, which is on the right of the front three. And the fact that Saka and Mount both played so well shows that, you know, Foden's under pressure, which I think is really a good thing because, it's competition for places in a good way.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. They're the sort of small amount of positives. There are a few more, of course, for England after this international break. There is so much to get our teeth into, though, in terms of the criticism and some of the negativity around the national team at the moment. Was it really only 14 months ago that there was positive energy, Ollie? You've written in your piece, amongst other things, of course. The mood around the team has changed so much. The draw last night, the comeback of sorts helped, but then obviously the error then from Nick Pope to give Germany the equaliser just undid even that a little bit. It just feels like it's not quite going right at the moment.
Yeah, if you look at the results since the Euros, it's been a bit up and down. I mean, there was that 10-0, wasn't there, in the qualifiers? There's been some big wins, but I think the Nations League games have been a bit of a reality check. With it's been three draws and three defeats, that is in no way good. They've finished bottom of the group. They're relegated to the second tier of the Nations League. It's been disappointing. But I think normally in this situation, you would be playing mid-ranking South American or North American or African or Asian or even European opposition to familiarise yourself with different tests ahead of the World Cup. It's normally fairly low-key, the build-up to a big tournament, fixture-wise. With the Nations League, there's none of that. It's been they've been playing against Italy twice, Germany twice, Hungary, who have surprised everybody twice, certainly surprised England at Molineux. So I'd say it's been a different kind of build-up, and it's obviously really fragmented anyway, with it being a World Cup which starts in November. So it's not like we're comparing like with like, really, but I think we would all look at it and perhaps wish there'd been more experimentation and wish that we'd had more of a look at, say, Trent Alexander-Arnold at right back or right wing back, Tomori at centre back. I'd have loved to have seen Foden in midfield at some point, or Ivan Toney in attack. You know, there are so many players who you think, well, surely they should have got more game time here. And perhaps it's because of the nature of these tests, the Nations League format, the fact that they're competitive games against leading nations. Perhaps that is what has made it less experimental than I think Southgate would ideally have wished.
And the pressure on the England manager at the moment as well, do you think that led to the teams becoming less and less experimental in that sense?
Yeah, I think they did. And you look at what happened in the game at Molineux against Hungary back in June. That was a fairly experimental lineup. That was a much more attacking lineup than we're used to. It's different centre-back pairing, and it was a much more lightweight, creative midfield than we're used to seeing with Southgate. And it didn't work. It was pretty disastrous. It was England's worst performance in a long time, really. So I think that has prompted him to go back in the other direction, go more conservative, pick more of the experienced players. And although a lot of us in the media and fans are no doubt wondering who's going to be in the squad and whether any of these marginal calls are any of the clearer, and I don't think a lot of them are, I think he's ended up deciding, well, I need to get the first 11 right. I need to get the system right and work out what plan A is before I start fretting too much about whether it's Ivan Toney or Dominic Calvert-Lewin or Ollie Watkins or whoever to take the last striking berth. It seems like those decisions have just been deprioritised, really.
Yeah, and Jack, do you think he has firmed up in his mind what the starting 11 is going to be, what the preferred formation is going to be, what the preferred partnerships are going to be throughout the team? Or does it feel actually, in a sense, that he's further away from that than at any point during his time as England boss?
No, I definitely think some things are clear at this point. Clearly, it's going to be the back three, at least for the start of the group stages, because he's played it in both these two games. I think, you know, even at the end of the June camp, I think it was apparent that he wanted to go back to basics, which I think in his case means the back three. Centre back, not entirely clear on the personnel, but I think it won't be very different from Maguire, Stones and Walker unless Dyer comes in. It'll certainly be James at right wing back. I think it'll probably be Shaw at left wing back. Rice and Bellingham are secure, and then it's going to be Kane, Sterling and one other, those three guys you mentioned earlier, Foden, Saka and Mount. So I think the team looks kind of 90% settled at this point.
And that's all right?
Yeah, you got to know. Like, it's better to know than to not know. Like, we, you know, it's... I mean, ultimately...
that's the debate, isn't it?
There's quite a big chance that the team won't look like that because someone will get injured. Like, we've got there's 6 weeks left of football, during which time, if you play for one of the top teams, you're going to be playing twice every week. Like, the chances of none of those players getting an injury, I mean, we saw Stones limp off yesterday. We don't know what's going to happen with Stones, but the chance of none of those guys getting an injury, I think, is actually pretty low. So maybe, you know, when they take the field for the Iran game, it will look a bit different. But at the moment, I think that's how it's going to look.
Yeah, especially with October having so many matches in as well at club level, of course. Ollie, that's the debate, though, isn't it, really? I suppose because England have underperformed during this Nations League campaign, and the team that Jack's sort of pointing out there is very similar to what it was at the start of this campaign, and it has underperformed, and there are players around the squad that fans are beginning to sort of home in on who are in the team and who aren't in the team. I wonder whether it is a positive that it is so settled. I'm sure Gareth Southgate wants it to be, and he seems very keen to back his players in that sense as well.
Yeah, I think he's almost come full circle with it, because I think if you look at the lineups through the qualifiers and through some of the early Nations League games, he was experimenting quite a lot, particularly in the friendlies back in March, experimenting a lot, looking at different players. Maguire, who I'm sure we will come to because he's central to this conversation, he's not actually played, or he hadn't played all that many of the games over the previous 12 months. He'd been rested on occasions. Southgate had looked at Connor Cody and Tyrone Mings, Ben White, Tomori, Gerhi. There have been various things looked at. Not too many of the players who have been looked at have really made an overwhelming case. So it comes down to, or it comes back to, whether Southgate wants to sort of really hone in on one of those younger players to sort of take over from Sterling, or whether it's take over from Maguire or Luke Shaw or whoever. And he's ended up in all three of those cases thinking, I go with the player I trust, because he does trust them. And whether that trust is frayed or fading in the case of Maguire, I expect it is. I expect it goes from a 100% confidence to a lot less than that. But I think if the World Cup was starting tomorrow, I think Harry Maguire would be starting too.
How much of a problem is Harry Maguire now to Gareth Southgate, Jacka? I mean, speaking from a United perspective, doing the Talk of the Devils pod, he's been a talking point, of course, for United fans for a long time. The summer was bizarre, really, I think, with England fans and the way that they reacted to Maguire, if you judge him on his England performances, because he's been very good in the white of England consistently over the last few years, team of the tournament in the Euros just last, or the summer before last. How much of an issue is it for Southgate? How much of a defining decision could it be about whether he keeps faith with Harry Maguire or not?
Yeah, I think it's one of the biggest decisions he's ever had to take. So far, I think Southgate has always been he has been loyal to the guys who've been there with him from the start. You know, Pickford's still there, Walker, Sterling. He's stuck by Pickford, for example, through some pretty difficult times at Everton. Whereas Maguire, at the moment, he's continued to play at the England team while not being in the Man United first team. I wonder, A, whether we'll see six more weeks of this, of him barely playing for United, or maybe just playing in Europe, and whether that will impact Southgate's thinking or not. Clearly, I think Ollie's right, at the moment, you'd bet on him playing, but I just don't know. I don't know, it doesn't feel like a permanently sustainable position, that, to me. But equally, Southgate might think, well, look, the World Cup's only less than 2 months away. If we can just get him on the field there, then we can wonder about the longer-term picture afterwards.
Yeah, I agree with Jack, and I feel that particularly in the circumstances where Maguire hadn't really kicked a ball for United for, what is it, nearly 6 weeks, I think it was important to look at him in this game, but I would have said it was also important to try and work out what plan B would be. I think if plan A still involves Harry Maguire, I can understand that. Maybe some other people can't or don't want to understand that, but I can understand it. But what I find harder to understand is why we haven't really seen a plan B evolve, which I think a lot of people fancy Fikayo Tomori for that role. He's clearly a very impressive young player. Mark Gahey at Crystal Palace is impressive, but we've not really seen them get enough action and minutes over these games. And while I can understand the need to give Maguire all the match practice he can get at the moment, and he still looks... Well, to be honest, this will sound stupid, but apart from giving away that goal in appalling circumstances or appalling manner, giving the ball away and then bringing the player down, I thought he played well.
He looked fairly solid in the first half, especially.
But then you have to say, you know, it's quite a big except when you're saying apart from giving that goal away and then sort of having a part in the second goal. So it's a concern. It's a major concern. But I don't think it's black and white in Southgate's mind. I think, as Jack says, he will have to revisit it if Maguire, for example, is playing in the Europa League and sort of making mistakes in every game, because that hasn't been what Maguire's been like in the past. I don't think he's ever been this sort of wonderful, imperious figure for club and country. But I don't think mistakes of that type last night, I don't think that's been typical. So that looked a bit like a player who was rusty, and they can't really afford for him to be rusty at the World Cup.
And Jack, is that a player as well who's struggling with this huge weight of scrutiny on his shoulders at the moment as well? What's your take on that? Because he seems to be a lightning rod for everything at the moment for club and country. I mean, you look at some of the stuff on social media that's directed his way every time he takes to the pitch, whether he plays well, he plays poorly, or somewhere in between. It must be such a struggle for him at the moment.
Yeah, that is my impression, that it is a bit of a burden, that huge amount of pressure and scrutiny that he has for both club and country. I think that's the thing with Maguire, and, you know, other people at The Athletic will know more about Maguire and know more what he's like than me, but my perception of it is that there's this kind of idea in English football that we really want him to be this kind of lion-hearted figure in the tradition of, you know, Terry Butcher or John Terry or Saul Campbell or Tony Adams or whatever. But I think, I'm not sure that's necessarily him. Like, there have been times where he's not playing so well and it does seem to get to him. You know, he doesn't have that kind of impenetrable thick skin that, you know, Adams or John Terry had in quite the same way. I don't know, that's, you know, this is me doing amateur psychology here. But I do, yeah, I mean, look, it's pretty clear that his performances in the last year or so have kind of struggled a bit under the scrutiny that he's faced. And I just don't know whether or not that puts him in the right position to to succeed at the World Cup?
That's the question, isn't it? Carl Anker, one of our colleagues for The Athletic, Ollie, tweeted that he needs saving from himself, extended leave and something with less scrutiny stroke responsibility when he returns. He doesn't become the player he used to be by asking him to play like that right now. Do you think he needs a spell out of the England spotlight? I mean, the next game is the World Cup, so spell out of the spotlight means he's not playing at a major tournament. That's not like missing a couple of friendlies, is it?
No, you remember the period, was it the start of last season or the season before, where he was, you know, he had the business after the court case, and there was a lot of scrutiny on him then, and he played against Denmark and he had a sort of terrible game for England. That to me was his only really, really bad game for England, and he got sent off, and it was an awful performance. And I remember saying at that point, this guy needs a rest, he needs to be taken out of the firing line because he is really struggling. I think right now what he needs is to be in the firing line, maybe not, doesn't need people highlighting everything he's doing and feeling that scrutiny. But the only way he can get back to playing like he can, which, you know, to repeat, isn't Virgil van Dijk's standard or Aymeric Laporte's standard, but it's it can be very good. It was very good for England at the last two tournaments. I think he needs to be playing. I think he could really do with something falling into place at United where he's playing more regularly. Certainly the Europa League game, certainly the Carabao Cup game, maybe the old Premier League game as well. And I think he needs that, because I thought the way he played last night, other than the terrible mistake, I thought it was somebody who seemed pretty sure of himself under the circumstances. He didn't seem nervous, but there was just that moment, wasn't there, where he just telegraphed that pass, and then in a sort of rusty attempt to make amends, he gave the penalty away in a pretty clumsy, crass fashion. So I think he needs to be playing rather than not playing.
My impression with Maguire, and again, you know, I defer to people who watch him more often than I do, but I feel like he needs everything in his game to be right for him to look good. When he's on top of his game, he can look really, really good. Like, he's assured, he's confident, he's sort of authoritative, he's good at bringing the ball out from the back, he's very emphatic in the way that he tackles people and everything. But because he's not the most talented player on the ball that I've ever seen, or maybe he's also not the most agile mover around the pitch compared to someone as graceful as, like, I don't know, a Rio Ferdinand, for example, who's, you know, more obviously a more naturally gifted player than Maguire. That means that when Maguire isn't on top of his game, he suddenly goes from looking very good to looking very bad quite quickly. So I think that when it's not really working for Maguire, he feels a little bit more, maybe a little bit more exposed than other players who, you know, for whom some of these things maybe come a bit more naturally to him. So in that sense, I do feel a bit sorry for him, because it seems like his mistakes are just a bit more obvious.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Okay, well, Harry Maguire by no means is the only player with a question mark over his head in the England team at the moment, Jack. You referred to it earlier on. Phil Foden actually is perhaps another one who, you know, started last night, but that position as the third man in the attack alongside Sterling and Kane is in question, isn't it? And he just doesn't seem to have quite managed to replicate his best City form for England. Is that because of the position, because of the players he's around? Why do you think that is?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think this is, if you wanted to criticise Southgate, I think this is something that he could fairly be criticised about. Foden made it, you know, Foden's no secret. Foden's been playing for England age group teams for years. He made his senior debut 2 years ago. He's not really played well for the senior team yet, not in a big game. I don't really know what his best position is for England. He's played all over the place for England in all sorts of different positions and systems. Don't really think Southgate knows how best to use him. The last two games he's played on the right of the front three, hasn't really done an awful lot, to be honest. And I think Saka and Mount have done sufficiently well, especially last night, that makes me think they'll probably start ahead of him. So yeah, Foden, it hasn't quite clicked yet for Foden for England.
Is it in Southgate's mind, Ollie, as well, that when Foden has probably played him the position that we expect him long-term to be in that number 10 role, which actually he's not really played that much for Pep Guardiola's Manchester City, maybe as much as we'd expect either. Is that in Southgate's mind when he's trying to fit him in? It's almost like he wants Foden to play more than the position suits Foden playing, if that question makes sense.
Yeah, it's a fairly similar position to the position he plays at Man City. You know, a wide role in the front three, whether it's wide right or wide left. I think the difference is, you know, particularly difference with last night, Man City are generally averaging like 75-80% possession in a lot of these games. He's getting constant opportunities to be on the ball. He's got Kevin De Bruyne, he's got Bernardo, different players sort of moving around and outside him. He's got Erling Haaland now. And I think it's perpetual motion, that team. And this team, this England team, is not like that. It's a team that's, you know, people are more fixed in their positions, and it's probably a big, big change for him. And I think if we look at it over the years, an awful lot of England's sort of wide attacking players haven't really clicked in the same way for the country as they have for the club. I remember John Barnes and Chris Waddle talking about this back in the 80s, about how few chances you get to express yourself. It's one-on-one. But it's
I knew you were going to do that.
So I think Foden is in a difficult position. I think if it's hard to replicate what he does for Manchester City, then you know, maybe a more sort of orthodox wide player, whether it's a Saka, you know, Saka did really well when he came on, or whether it's Jadon Sancho coming back into the squad, whether it might be Grealish, I don't know. You know, they might be players who offer more, but I think if I was picking a team, I would pick Phil Foden just because I love him as a player and I would want it to work, but it hasn't really been working yet. And the Euros, he was the one that started in the Euros, and he didn't really catch fire the way that, say, Saka did. So it's a difficult one.
I do think that because Foden's played his whole career at City and for Guardiola City, coming out of that into England is actually quite difficult. I think he has, it looks to me from the outside as if he has found that transition difficult. Like it's, is he kind of, because you don't have that kind, you're not surrounded by that same synchronized movement and complex patterns that you get at City. And so I think at times in the Euros, I thought he was trying to do too much by himself, you know, trying to take on too many people and everything. But it's a little bit like the Alexander-Arnold debate, isn't it? It's, you know, we've got this brilliantly talented player. Does that mean that Southgate has a responsibility to get them in the team, or should he just pick the players who actually fit the roles that he wants them to do?
Yeah, that is a debating point. I mean, with Trent Alexander-Arnold, is he even getting in the squad, Ollie? That's the factor, isn't it? I mean, you know, there's an article on The Athletic from James Pearce about, you know, the Liverpool take on Alexander-Arnold not making England squads when he's such an important player for them. There is a jarring of the judgment on Merseyside compared to Gareth Southgate's opinion.
Yeah, and again, it's an issue where you're going from one team which is sort of expansive and he's on the ball so much at Liverpool to a setup which is really very different. I mean, it's not the polar opposite of that, but it's a much more orthodox, conservative way of playing with England. I think if you look at the way Alexander-Arnold's played for England, if I was speaking after the Euros final about just over 12 months ago, and if you've been saying what team would you want for the World Cup, I think I'd have said, right, well, I'd want Alexander-Arnold at right back, and I'd want Foden, but not out wide. I'd want Foden in midfield, but we've not seen those things. We've not seen those things develop. When he has played Alexander-Arnold, he's not really looked like he believes it and feels it and feels the trust and feels the...
Well, is that surprising when he's struggling to even make squads, though?
No, it's a chicken and egg thing, really, isn't it? He was dropped when he was dropped at the sort of first sign of a loss of form, what was it, about 18 months ago, when Liverpool were going through that sticky patch. His form, actually, the last few months, or the first couple of months of the season, hasn't been great at Liverpool. I think that has to be acknowledged. And I think it's, people will say, well, Harry Maguire's in, Luke Shaw's in. And I think the competition for places is completely different in those two positions, left back and centre back, to what it's like at right back, where you've got James, Walker, Trippier, Alexander-Arnold. It's the competition for places is crazy. And yeah, I could see a situation where Alexander-Arnold doesn't make the cut, because he seems to be fourth in line for those slots. And I was really surprised that Southgate didn't take the opportunity to look at him against Italy. I thought it was a real opportunity to against Germany and to test him against really good opposition in that role that we've not really seen him play very often.
I've done a bit of a U-turn on Alexander-Arnold. I used to hold what you might call the James Pearce view on this, which is that he's so good it would be crazy and somehow insulting or disrespectful to not pick him. I kind of don't really think that anymore. I now think, if Southgate doesn't trust him, what's the point of him even being around? I don't really think it does anyone any good. Alexander-Arnold being in this weird kind of fringe position on the edge of the England squad, like getting called up but not playing.
But should Southgate trust him? I guess that's the question and the point of criticism, isn't it?
No, not really. Not necessarily, because you're never going to get Liverpool Alexander-Arnold in an England shirt, because Liverpool are Liverpool. Like, they've got Klopp, they've got lots of other world-class players, they train together all the time and have done since 2015. It's just very, very different. You know, you can't replicate what he is able to do with his club for England. So I think, you know, if Southgate isn't going to trust him, why should he pretend like he's on the edge of his plans? But isn't it just cleaner for everyone to not involve him? I don't know.
I guess as well, Jack, within that, it's another sort of symbol or emblem is probably a better way of putting it, of the scrutiny that's on Southgate at the moment. It's these types of decisions, because the results haven't been great over the past 12 months, that he's getting judged on now. And obviously, if England are winning football matches, the criticism and scrutiny is a lot lower than now. So it is the type of decision to pick Harry Maguire, to leave Alexander-Arnold out of a squad, what to do with Phil Foden, all these types of matters, are they just bigger issues now because of the form of the team? Is that too simplistic?
I don't think anyone cares. The fact is, if the team are winning, people don't care who's playing. Like, himself, you know, it doesn't matter who... Like, all this selection stuff is just a stick to beat him with if the results and performances are bad. And then people, you know, if people see the results are bad, then they use that and be like, oh, the results are bad because he hasn't picked this player that I like. So I actually think that, Southgate kind of referenced this in the press conference yesterday. He said he can't just govern by popularity. He can't just pick the popular players to avoid criticism. To be honest, the fact that he includes Alexander-Arnold in his squads and doesn't play him does smack to me a little bit of exactly that. You know, he's picking him.
Trying to keep people happy.
Oh, look, I picked him. You know, don't complain about me, Liverpool fans. I kind of feel like thinking about the popularity or not of selection decisions before you think about the success or not of the team is completely the wrong way around of doing it. I think he has to pick the best team, or the team that he thinks is the best team, and then worry about getting slagged off for not picking whoever afterwards.
How much scrutiny should there be on his position, Ollie, at the moment, Gareth Southgate?
Scrutiny on decisions and scrutiny on selections.
His future?
Because, well, I think I was surprised when he signed a new contract to take him to 2024, which... I felt, to my mind, I know this isn't a unanimous view, but to my mind, I think he's done a really, really good job as England manager. But I've been around long enough to see England managers look very good going into a tournament and look like a busted flush after a tournament. Because, I bet you won't find many of the coaches at the World Cup having signed long-term contracts to take them into the next tournament cycle. I thought that was unnecessary. I just think, why not just leave it open? I don't think they were going to lose him to a top club job. I don't think Chelsea were going to appoint him or anything like that. I think if he hadn't signed a contract, I think we would all be saying, well, he's got to perform or he's out of a job. But that's just normal. That's just normal international football after going into a tournament. So I think, although he's done a really good job, there's got to be this feeling or worry at the back of the FA's minds that it might be that this is a tournament too far, or that the next tournament would be a tournament too far. I don't know, because to me, they've been sort of treading water a little bit since the Euros, and they've not really evolved the way I'd expected or hoped. Performances, results haven't been great. I definitely don't think there's any case whatsoever for saying they should change coach before the World Cup. I think that would be absolute madness. I don't think that would be fair, because I think he's done a good job, and I don't think it'd be the right thing to do anyway. But I think in terms of what happens after the World Cup, I think he needs to get to a certain standard of performance and standard of results in order to keep his job or avoid scrutiny, serious scrutiny.
All right, his immediate future not in question, Jack, but does it feel like Qatar could well be the end of the Southgate cycle for you, despite the fact that he's got that contract in place for two more years? Or is it just going to depend on what they do in the World Cup, which again seems like a really simplistic way of placing a manager's future, really?
My instinctive reading of the situation is that it's far likelier that he will quit than that he's sacked. I can't see the FA sacking him. And maybe if they lost all three games, but I think if that happened, he would quit anyway. I think it feels to me like it is likelier that he will say, I've done my bit. I've done my time. I've done my three tournaments. It's time for somebody else to have a go. Who knows? This could be another one of my terrible predictions, but that's just my how I kind of read the feeling at the moment.
Well, you said exactly the same back in the summer, Jack, as well, when we spoke on this podcast, when there was even some murmurings then of discontent around England fans' opinion of Southgate, that you felt it was more likely to quit.
I just don't think it's sustainable for him. It depends a lot on the fans, I think, but I think Qatar and also how we think the fans will be in the next cycle. But I don't really think it's sustainable for him to be getting abused by the fans all the time. And I don't think he would want that, and I don't think anybody would want that, really. And also, to be honest, I know they were good yesterday, and yesterday was, to be honest, their best performance of the year, which in itself is quite damning because they weren't that good. But they have looked quite stale. You know, they haven't scored a lot of goals. They haven't created a lot of chances. They've not won any of the last six games.
They haven't won. It's the first time since 93.
I know it's kind of coloured by the comeback yesterday. They have had a disastrous Nations League campaign. The results have been awful. The performances, they've had one good performance out of six, which was yesterday. And I think arguably maybe it is time for a little bit of fresh energy in the team.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, let's leave it there then. Of course, there'll be more debate, more scrutiny about the decisions and about Gareth Southgate's future as we build up to the World Cup in 2 months' time now. It's only just around the corner. The next time England kick a ball, of course, will be in Qatar. When that match takes place, Ollie, against Iran, what's your starting 11?
Oh, God, I think I'm going to get people cancelling their subscription or just
you're going to
throwing...
pick Alexander-Arnold, aren't you?
Do you know what?
And Henderson and Milner.
Pickford, that's an easy one. I think I would have Maguire. And the reason I would have Maguire is an alternative hasn't arisen in terms of that left-sided central defender, whether it's in a back three or a back four. That alternative hasn't arisen. And the reason that alternative hasn't arisen is because of selections. I was hoping to see Tomori or Gehi in one of these games, or in the games that they did play, making a really, really sort of strong partnership, you know, alongside John Stones, or I would see it as John Stones being a shoo-in. So that's me excusing why, because of the lack of time and total lack of time between the end of the Premier League or the pause in the Premier League season and that first game against Iran, I think you've got to go with what's tried and trusted, by which I mean tried and trusted by the manager, because there are too many unknown quantities with others. And it's a terrible situation to be in, because I think they should be in a better position by now. So I've gone Pickford, back four, because I just prefer the 4-3-3. Walker, Stones, Maguire, Shaw. And I'm not happy with it. And I know other people will hate me for it, but that's what I'm doing. Midfield, question mark, Rice and Bellingham. Front three, Foden, Kane, Sterling. So it's not too different to Southgate's thinking, but I'd make myself really unpopular again by saying Jordan Henderson in midfield.
Over who?
Well, it's probably over a central defender. It's probably over a right back, over Reece James, because Reece James is the player who drops out of the last night's line up, and it would be Walker to right back and Henderson in midfield. And I just think with the players England have got to come off the bench, Saka, Mount, Grealish and others, you know, Sancho, I would hope, hits form by then. Reece James, I think there are so many ways you can go into that a match with that kind of lineup, control it, hopefully get into the lead, and then perhaps sort of twist from a position of strength or twist if you need to. I think my lineup is really boring. I think it's some people will hate it, but I think it's the kind of thing that Southgate will have to do because of what he's done so far.
Jack, who are you going for?
Back three, Pickford, Walker, Dyer, Stones as my back three. I think we saw last night Stones doesn't have to play in the middle of the three. He played in the right of the three yesterday. I think that...
So you're dropping Maguire then?
I'm dropping Maguire. I just don't think it makes sense to pick him at the moment. So even though Stones doesn't have a lot of experience in the left of the three, I would just trust him to figure it out because he's a good player. And that way you get Dyer in the middle, which is what he did for both these games. James at right wing back is an obvious one. Shaw at left wing back, I think, is also obvious. You know, Southgate's not a huge fan of Chilwell, and Saka doesn't play there for Arsenal. So
it worked last night as well, didn't it? Picking Luke Shaw despite his club form, conversely to Harry Maguire.
Really. I know, yeah. I've held Shaw and Maguire to completely different standards here and being a big hypocrite, but it's my team, so that's my right. Then in the middle, I've got Rice and Bellingham. That kind of picks itself. Kane, Sterling, and then it was a really even choice between Saka, Foden and Mount, and I've just about gone for Saka. Well, he's Saka from the start, but I'm liable to change my mind on that one. So it's not that different from what we've seen over these last two games, to be honest.
Why Saka?
Foden's not really played well for England before, and Mount has played better for England than Foden has, and Mount gives you a bit extra in terms of defensively, in terms of creativity, like knitting the play together. I think he adds a lot to the overall game, but I just really like Saka's pace. He's direct, he works hard, he's very intelligent. He can have a big impact. So maybe I've got this the wrong way around. Maybe it makes more sense to start Foden and bring on Saka in the second half. But yeah, I've written down Saka and I'm going to stick with it.
Fair enough. And just as a final point to both of you, really, see if either of you've got a strong opinion on this. Is there anyone who's not even in the squad at the moment who you think has a chance of making that first 11? Is there any potential for surprise or not?
The one player who hasn't played at all for the seniors under Southgate, who hasn't even been called up for a squad, but who I can just about see it is Ryan Sessegnon, because he
really
is playing. He's one of the few players who he's playing as a left wing back. He's literally playing in the system that England play, and England don't have any specialist left wing backs. You know, Shaw's barely even playing for Man United. Like, he hasn't played. I don't think he's played a minute in the Premier League since halftime at Brentford when they were 4-0 down.
Not a left wing back either.
Whereas Sessegnon literally plays in this position for Tottenham, who are one of the best teams in the country. And, you know, Southgate knows him because he's played an awful lot for the England youth group teams. He played for the 21s the other day. He's looking better and better under Conte. So I just think if Sessegnon has a really good next six weeks, I just wonder if he might somehow scrape it.
I think people will be thinking James Maddison might have a chance, but I don't think he has. I don't think Southgate particularly fancies him.
Marcus Rashford?
Oh, in terms of players who are currently out of the squad, I would think Rashford and Sancho have got a reasonable chance of playing their way back in, because they've actually played all right the last month or so for Man United, and certainly playing better than they were for much of last season. So I would think they've got a decent chance. I mean, Sancho might be vying with Jared Bowen for that sort of final attacking space, but if that's the case, you know, they might spend a lot of time on the bench.
If Rashford and Sancho keep playing well for Man United and are fit and looking good, I would fast track them both into the squad in a heartbeat. No, you know, they are comfortably better than lots of the alternatives that England will take otherwise.
I agree.
The fact is that England have massively declined since Rashford stopped playing so well for them. Like, you know, England don't have a third goal scorer. It's all Kane and Sterling, and they've really suffered since Rashford stopped scoring goals for England. So yeah, I would definitely shortcut Rashford straight back into the system.
Yeah, I feel like we've opened a can of worms there with that final question. We could have done a whole podcast just on that, but we'll have to leave it there. Ollie and Jack, thank you very much for being with us.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
For unrivaled England coverage in the lead up to the Qatar World Cup and so much more besides, simply subscribe to The Athletic for just £1 a month for the first 6 months. Go to theathletic.com/footballpod. We'll be back tomorrow at roughly the same time in the afternoon. But for the minute, thanks for listening. Hit subscribe and we'll see you again soon.
The Athletic.